I'm Tony Cox, and this is News and Notes. President Barack Obama broke through major racial barriers when he won the White House in November. But how does his achievement affect how different races feel about each other and what will change? At News and Notes, we've often discussed this issue from an African-American perspective, but rarely do we hear from folks who are not black on the sensitive subject of race, until today. We have invited bloggers who are white to join us and to hear from them their perspectives on race and the election of the nation's first black president. With us today are Dan Agin, an emeritus biologist at the University of Chicago and a blogger at the Huffington Post, and Brandon Perkins, a writer for the LA Weekly and also a blogger for the Huffington Post. Welcome to News and Notes.
Thanks, Tony.
Nice to have you. President Obama addressed our nation's history of racial division during his inaugural address last week. Here's part of what he said.
For we know that our patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers. We are shaped by every language and culture, drawn from every end of this earth. And because we have tasted the bitter swill of civil war and segregation and emerged from that dark chapter stronger and more united, we cannot help but believe that the old hatreds shall someday pass.
So, Brandon, how would you describe our nation's dialogue about race before Obama ran for the presidency compared to now?
Well, I think that, throughout the years, race has always been difficult, especially for white journalists to address. As things got more and more PC throughout the 90s, people were concerned about being lambasted for their views or for saying the wrong word or for their opinions being misconstrued somehow. And I think that things are getting even more sensitive now that Obama has taken office. But because he has obviously ascended to the most visible position in the world, it is a topic that is completely unavoidable now, and people are forced to deal with it.
That's interesting. Brandon says it's more sensitive and yet unavoidable. Dan, what do you say?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to recognize that this is a very pluralistic society. There's no one culture. There's no one group, and the various subcultures and groups in the society are going to react differently to what has happened. The election of Obama is a conceptual and intellectual and emotional watershed. There's no question about that. And the problem is that it's going to take time before the consequences ripple through the rest of the population. This is not something that's going to happen overnight. I don't think that the racial attitudes of the country, which are practically intrinsic to American society because they go back so many centuries, are going to disappear very fast. I don't think that at all. What I do think is that the presence of a black family in the White House is going to change the psychology for black children in an enormous way, and that will have a tremendous effect. But as far as the white population is concerned, there are segments of the white population that will be drawn to more interaction with people of color, but there are segments that won't. I don't think we can make a generalization about everybody.
Let me combine two questions in one for you, Brandon, and they're these. Is there a fear in the white community that President Obama's administration is going to somehow cater to minority interests at the expense of whites? And secondly to that, what is it that whites want from this new administration?
Well, to answer your first part, I mean, there's always going to be a segment of the population that's deranged and racially sensitive and conspiracy theory orientated. We can see that even in this first week with the little hullabaloo about Robert Reich saying that he wanted to make sure that some of these government jobs didn't go only to white construction workers. And, of course, the extreme right taking his words completely out of context and saying that, he only wanted people of color in those jobs, unskilled or not.
The former labor secretary.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. And to answer your second part of the question, I think that, you know, the majority of this country, you know, we want the change, and, you know, we've lost 200,000 jobs in the month of January already, and, you know, people are feeling that effect very much.
So do whites and blacks want the same thing, do you think?
I think so. I think, you know, amazingly as it is, that it's more than just the melanin in the skin that we want.
Do you agree with that, Dan?
Well, look, Barack Obama is an extremely competent guy, and the hope of everyone who feels threatened by the forecast about the economy is that he can himself and the people around him find a fix so that we all don't go down the tubes. But that question is different than the question of the impact of his presidency on race relations. That's a different ballgame altogether. Everyone hopes that the federal government, now headed by Barack Obama, is going to save us from economic disaster. But at the same time as they hope that, there are many, many, many people who will not change their attitude overnight about people who are not white. It's not going to happen overnight. That's my take on it. It's an individual take, and like most things in have to do with society, we don't have any evidence to make an overwhelming demonstration that is the truth. But that's my personal take on this.
Here is an example of a difference of opinion, a quantifiable difference of opinion between blacks and whites as it relates to the president. A CNN poll showed that 53% of blacks say the American public will hold Obama to a higher standard because he is black. 61% of whites say Obama's race will not matter in how he'll be judged. Do you think, Brandon, that Obama will be held to a different standard because of his race?
I think that the power of his celebrity at this point has already put so much pressure and eyeballs on his everyday moves. You know, the photos from inside the White House are on PerezHilton.com, and, you know, the school lunches of his children are being reported. And so much of what we've heard over the past 8 years has only been negative. We only heard about George Bush's family when the twins were getting in trouble for drunk driving or something like that. And it really goes back to the tone that he is putting. He's not going to be able to solve everything on his own, but it's the tone that he's putting out into the world that's really kind of filtering out into the rest. There's more of a positive tone there.
So, Dan, why do you think black and white Americans seem to view this issue so differently?
Well, first of all, if you're talking about white Americans, let's differentiate between the people who voted for Obama and the people who didn't vote for Obama.
Good
I think
point.
The people who did not vote for Obama are going to pick every possible fault that they can find in the politics and in the day-to-day life of Michelle and the kids. I mean, that's what they're going to do, because they would like to rip him out of the White House and put someone in there that they approve of politically. So, again, it's not a homogeneous population if you talk about white people. There are white people who voted for Obama, and there are white people who didn't vote for Obama, and their attitude about how he does day by day is going to be totally different as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, this is the way black people say it all the time. We're not homogeneous, and people don't seem to understand
yes.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me let the listeners know what we're doing. You're listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about race relations, and we do that all the time here at News and Notes, but we don't often do it with bloggers who are white. Today, we are. Dan Agin is an emeritus biologist at the University of Chicago and a blogger at the Huffington Post, and Brandon Perkins is a writer for the LA Weekly and also a blogger for the Huffington Post. Here's something, gentlemen, that came up that I'd like to get you to respond to. Several comedians, including Bill Maher, have talked about the difficulty they have making jokes about Barack Obama. And I hearken back to the Barack the Magic Dragon video parody that was done by a congressman that got him in such hot water. And we had when we played that on the station here, we had responses from the audience, people suggesting that maybe we need to lighten up, and when will it be okay to make Barack Obama the subject of parody? So my question, Brandon, is, Why do you think comedians and others, for that matter, feel uncomfortable making fun of Obama, especially whites?
Well, there's been a history of racial insensitivity in comedy over decades, and it's definitely mirrored the attitudes of race in America as a whole. And now that we're coming to this climax of sorts, where race is thrust so violent, not violently, but thrust so vividly into the American forefront, that they are going to be forced to deal with it. And the question comes, well, where did the jokes come from? The jokes have been very easy for the past 8 years, whether they were just simple bumbling sound clips or Bush walking into the wrong door that was locked, you know. And now we're faced with real issues and real problems, and somebody who handles himself very calmly and coolly. And it's an easy joke to make race, but it would be an easy joke to make one about race, but one that would not be accepted widely, I think, and you know, would put somebody out of a career, perhaps.
Is there a hesitancy, do you think, Dan, in terms of the kinds of remarks people can make, whether on stage or in private, about a Barack Obama if the person making the remarks is white?
It depends on the audience. Absolutely depends on the audience. There are enclaves of white people who are essentially colorblind, and for these people, they can make jokes about Obama without feeling self-conscious about it, because they're not making jokes about his race that involve his race. In other collections of people, if they make jokes about Obama, race will always be a factor. As far as the people on stage are concerned, people on stage have an audience, and they're usually earning a living by saying certain things to that audience, and that's going to play a very important role in what they say and what they don't say. So again, homogeneity is a very difficult assumption to hold, because we're too pluralistic, and I don't think we can answer the question for everyone. We really can't, because the society is too fragmented in the way it thinks, in its history and its education and the kinds of work that people do.
I appreciate both of you coming on. My next question is this, though. Do you feel comfortable? I've been watching your body language, Brandon, as we're sitting here, and I'm sensing that you're a little defensive because you're not sure what I'm going to hit you with.
Well, sure.
That's fair, right?
I think a lot of it is, as I sit here, I feel almost more a member of the hip-hop generation than I do a white blogger. I would identify myself first with that. That's primarily the music that I cover.
Mm-hmm.
That is my area of expertise. And I think that Obama relates very much with this hip-hop generation, more than just having Jay-Z on his iPod. It's the way that he carries himself. Hip-hop has had this obsession with the word swagger for so much in 2008 that you could compile an entire album worth of songs just talking about boycotting the word swagger. And this is something that Obama carries himself with immensely and relates himself to. And in this hip-hop generation, since Dr. Dre exploded onto the scene with Nothing But a G Thing in the early 90s, the majority of the buying audience has been white. And there has been a mixing of the cultures. And I think that it's definitely affected Obama's ability to be elected in this country. Obviously, the support of the hip-hop community, both white and black, was immense in his campaign.
Certainly, there's a generational factor. Well, let me ask you, Dan, because as an emeritus biologist, you're closer in age to me than both of us are to Brandon. Do you feel comfortable being really honest? And I'm not suggesting that you are not being that now, but do you feel comfortable being honest about talking about racial issues when people of different races are around you?
Well, I'm a scientist, so you know, it doesn't mean anything to me. I feel no emotional pressure at all, absolutely none. I feel no discomfort at all talking about these issues.
That's interesting. You don't feel it either, Brandon?
No. I mean, it's a fact of life. You know, the history of race in this country is well documented. And there are those differences, but, you know, as Dan has been saying, it's an incredibly fragmented and pluralistic society, and, you know, I can't sit here and speak for every single person who is white.
But when you got the call to come on a black show on National Public Radio to talk race, to talk about the president, the new black president, with a black host, did you not have pause?
No, I had no. I mean, I've spent my entire career reporting on black artists and dealing with something that's pretty much called black music, despite whoever is buying it or running the record labels. And a lot of that has to deal with race. You know, how am I going to quote an artist who is using the N-word? Am I going to spell that out? Am I going to stay true to the quotes? You know, a lot of that comes down to the publication, of course. But, you know, these are questions that I've asked myself throughout my entire career.
Final thing is this. We have less than a minute. Dan, are you feeling hopeful about race relations in this country now? More hopeful than perhaps you were before this election?
I think it's going to take time. It's going to take a long time because I may be a pessimist, but I'm fully cognizant of the history of the country and the degree to which racism, not only against blacks but against anybody who's different than people in Wichita, Kansas, is a part of the fabric of American society, and it's not going to be overturned very, very quickly. I don't think so.
A yes or no from you, Brandon. Are you feeling more hopeful?
Yeah, I think I am feeling more hopeful. A lot of it comes down to the tone of unity coming from the president's office right now.
Gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for coming on. We'd like to invite you back sometime.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Dan Agin, an emeritus biologist at the University of Chicago and a blogger at the Huffington Post, joining us from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago. And Brandon Perkins, a writer for the LA Weekly and also a blogger for the Huffington Post, joining me right here in the studios of NPR West. That's our show for today. Glad you could join us. To listen to the show or subscribe to the podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. And to join the conversation or sign up for the newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium.